something good.
All right. It's April the 11th, 2019. Meeting of the quarterly meeting of the Animal Services Advisory Committee. My name is John Lynn. I'm the current chair on the committee. Starting to my left, I'd like all the other committee members to please introduce themselves.
To your left?
Mm-hmm.
I'm Carol Roop.
Catherine Overstreet.
Patricia McDuff.
James Varble.
Brian Jill.
Donna Young.
Jack Walsh.
All right. Ask someone to bring us to order as far as the meeting. Would someone like to motion that we go into public meeting here?
I'll move that we go into public meeting.
Second? Okay. Second. All right, so we're now in public meeting. The first part of the public meeting here is public comment, and we have someone here, yay, that is looking to comment?
No.
No?
No,
you sure? We'll let you.
That's Joy.
She works at the animal shelter. I recognize her.
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to take
a poke
at her.
She would probably like to make some comments, but she's not.
She's a nice lady. I'll take a poke at her.
In public.
Oh, no, I'm not going to cut her off. I'll let Joy say whatever she wants to.
Okay. Well, if we don't have anybody, any public comment, then the first item of business here is the approval of the meeting notes from January 10th. Brad sent us all an email basically saying that the recording was not successful and everything. So instead of that, we're going to have to approve it here. So I ask someone to make a motion to approve the public meeting notes from January the 10th.
I move to approve the meetings from January. Why did somebody else do it?
Because you're doing so well. Go ahead.
I'll second her motion to approve the meeting minutes from January 10th, 2019.
We have a motion and we have a second. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
That's carried. Discussion items. Scheduling of dangerous dog hearings. Also with this tonight's Brad Rayfield. He's the director at the animal shelter over here in Henderson County and does a fine job of it. Brad, what was on your mind tonight about this? Just new schedule out? And
yeah, we had agreed to at each meeting at least schedule 3 months or up until the next meeting. So that would bring us to decide April 25th, April, May, June, and the July. The first Thursday of July. I should clarify.
Volunteer. How do you want to handle
what we can do, not do?
That's up to you guys. I've got who has participated already this year, so.
I can do July 11th. And the
10th
and
25th. July the 11th. You cannot? Oh, you can? Okay.
I can do May 9th.
And keep in mind that either the vice chair or the chair need to be available in each slot, too. So we don't want to double.
I can do the 25th of April.
There are more dates that I can do than can't, so I'll wait till everybody,
okay.
And then you can.
John, are there any dates you cannot do?
That's what I'm looking. Let me look through my calendar and let everybody else pick some dates, because there are going to be a couple that I'm not going to be able
John,
to.
John, you said you could do April 25th, James.
May 9th, and May 30th.
Oh, April 25th, May 9th, and May 30th.
Catherine, you're already on April 11th.
Which is today.
Is it? Oh, yeah. Good Lord have mercy. This month's just moving. Brad, I'm good for April 25th. You can go ahead and put me down for that.
Okay.
And I'm not, so that works.
That works good. Okay. May 9th is no for me.
July 25th is a no for me.
Are you good on May 9th?
Okay, Catherine, can you do May 9th?
Yes.
I can do May 30th. Let me get into June here.
can do both dates in August.
I can do the 8th of August.
If y'all want to go that far out, we can, but
it's kind of hard because you don't know.
Yeah, we're good to do it till our next meeting, which is July the 11th. And okay. Then at that meeting, we'll decide the rest of the year or up till October, I guess.
I'll go ahead and fill it out. Can I just give this back to you, and then you'll know what I can and can't do?
Yeah, that's fine.
And Brad, I can do every date except May 9th. So if you want to plug me in,
okay.
Feel free.
All right, so Catherine, you were good for May the 9th, and I was good for May 30th, right? Is that where we're down to?
Yep.
Okay, yeah. Let me dig into June here. I can do either or on that one.
You have a preference in June?
Pretty much right now know when I'm going to be gone this summer, so that's easy.
I can do the 13th or the 27th in June, either one.
Do either one.
I'd prefer to do the 13th if I could.
All right.
If you do the 27th. Okay. All right, so 13th and 27th. And then July, I know our meeting's on the 11th. If we have a dangerous dog hearing, happen to have one on the 11th, mm-hmm. So I can do that one if we need to. So
yeah, and like you said, that's when but we may schedule it earlier, so we would need to know who can be here earlier. So you can be here earlier if we were to
Yeah,
discuss.
I'm flexible that day, yeah.
However, we've started trying to schedule them later just in case we had parties or witnesses that wanted to attend. Thing. Yeah,
I think that's actually worked out pretty good, too. And yeah, I know we all of us who've done done the dangerous dog hearings since we've changed that and everything, I think all of us really appreciate it.
Because if you're on the fence about something, sometimes that witness can really make the difference. So.
Absolutely.
And I should be available for alternatives. I'm sitting, if necessary, in the first quarter, but
okay.
I can be available as
an alternate.
Yeah.
An alternate for every spot.
Probably. I'm not leaving town.
Okay, so I'm going to put you down as an alternate for April the 25th, May the 9th, and May the 30th.
He was
also
concerned about the
June the 13th.
Me and Catherine there, and then everybody else can fill in.
And also June 27th.
John said you could do it the 25th, right?
Of?
April. The next
yes.
one.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I had yeah, to. Definitely. I could cancel something. But
okay. So really, the only gap that we need to fill here is May the 9th, because Patty said she could do, well, and then we've
I
got.
I can do it. I've already got.
You're already there for
okay.
it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
May the 9th.
I can't do May the 9th.
Yeah, that's the one you said okay. you couldn't do.
Donna and Catherine said yes.
Yeah. And so if nobody else can do it, we can put you into that alternate spot. I mean, to the regular spot, but we just hope that you're all three available and nothing happens.
I can do the 13th of June.
Okay.
Somebody else.
Okay. So that's three there. So we need June 27th. Patty, can I put you in for June 27th?
You'll be sending this out, right? The schedule out?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah.
So if anybody else sees that they can do it May 30th, or Carol, do you want me to just go ahead and put you in as a regular on those?
That would be fine with me. And if anyone, you know, shakes it down later and thinks they are available and would like to do it, that's good too.
So we've got enough for all the spots. And to move, go forward further, we had talked about a time, I think one of our times fell on December the 26th, which is the day after Christmas. None of us want to be here. So I did get the schedule changed. So now it's on December the 23rd, which is a Monday. The same goes for Thanksgiving. November the 25th is the new date, and that's on a Monday, too. It was like on the 28th or something, which was the day before Thanksgiving or something. So we've got those two dates changed, but we don't need to fill those spots until we get closer. So, all right, so I'll email this out as it stands. If anybody figures out that they might can fill in one of those spots, let me know. And Mr. Chair.
All right. Next order of business is the introduction of possible ordinance changes.
You're up.
Am I ready?
You're up.
Okay.
I didn't know. It's got both of you listed, so I didn't know which one of you.
Vince has the majority of it. And I can do the part that affects us, Vince, at the end if you want me to, but it's pretty straightforward the way I've got it written. So
everybody should have a copy that looks like this with them.
No, we didn't get that.
I hadn't handed it out yet. I didn't want to get sidetracked.
Oh, well, yeah. So you don't want to step ahead.
Thank you. Pop belly?
Yes, ma'am.
A pop.
Is it pop belly or pot?
Pot.
Belly.
Everybody down there have one?
Sorry. It's the belly pig. Yeah, my bad. Pot belly pig.
This is not the same thing.
I think it's a different
meeting. I'm not sure how this falls.
No, that's not us. They got the agenda for a different board.
Oh, really?
Boy, Vince is really stepping up.
Just branching out. Sorry.
Had big words in everything.
Where was it at?
Yeah. Just my bad. It's been a long
anymore?
Day.
Something that was laying over there.
You can have mine.
Are we short?
Yeah.
Man, a lot of people showed up tonight. That's cool.
You knew yours? You were speaking.
That's what you say, yeah.
You've seen this before, hadn't you, Brad?
Well, just
about 10 minutes ago.
The stuff at the end that emailed
me. Oh, I spelt it right. I just put the wrong. All right. So on the first one there, we need to change that name, if we could. Get rid of the pop with the P, put the T.
Can you talk into the microphone a little better?
Yeah. Can you hear me now?
It's close.
How close do you want me to get? I don't know where this microphone's been. How's that? Is that good?
Not much.
Better?
Yes.
Yeah.
We good now? Okay. So, that's too much. I don't like microphones. So, on the first part there, we deal a lot with potbelly pigs that are running around at large, and we're taking them in. And right now, they're listed as livestock. And as livestock, we have to take these things in, and we have to photograph them. We have to post that we have them. We have to keep them posted for a minimum of 10 days. And then we have to run an auction on them to try to auction them off. So if we can change those to be listed under our domestic animals versus livestock animals, and everybody, I mean, yeah, they're not used as livestock. They're used as domestic animals. People keep them as pets. We'll be able, if we get one in, after 3 days, it would belong to the county, and we can get it adopted out versus having to keep the thing for about 15, 20 days before we can actually set up an auction to hold an auction.
What if an owner came forward after 4 or 5 days and said it's livestock? I mean, is there any, is there going to be an overlap there?
I don't think so. I think we can define it as we see fit in the county.
Can you look at them and tell they're somebody's pet?
A lot of times they'll follow you. I mean, they're you could tell these, you know, they're not wild.
The only reason I ask is on the Department of Agriculture side, if you find one wild running, it can be placed in what they call a feral, like a feral hog. I know it's just a small pot-bellied pig, but and there's things in place at the state level to, like a ratification for them to get completely rid of them.
Yeah, a lot of these things that we're getting encounters with, they're not feral. They're people's pets. People are buying these things when they're like this, and a month later they get like this.
And then they let them run.
And then another month later they're back out like this, and they can't keep them in. It's just like a regular pig. You can't keep them in a pen unless you know what you're doing to build the pen.
Is there going to be any blowback if one of them is a...
Well, under the ordinance right now, any domestic animal after the 3 days of impoundment belongs to the county. It becomes property of the county.
Well, but the pot-bellied pigs are livestock right now?
Right now.
They're not used as livestock.
So you don't see any blowback if – do we have any pot-bellied pigs in the county?
Oh. Lots
of them.
Lots. And what's happening, they're buying them as a cute pet, and like Donna said, they get big, and then they turn them loose. When you buy them as a small pet, it is a domestic animal.
Yeah.
But as it gets bigger, it does turn into livestock because they're no longer their house pet, and they stick them outside and think, well, we'll just raise him on out and do something with him.
Yeah.
So it can easily, there's a fine line there between, you know, I guess the size is to whether or not they're, if they're still claiming it, oh, that's my pet. Well, then we need to treat them like we do all the other animals. But the ones that are turning them out and calling them livestock, you kind of, it could have a little blowback, but not huge.
But you do it so that the definition as it is it the date of sale? I mean, whoever buys the pig.
Well, no. That what we're sale? Trying to get out of is not having to hold the auction.
Yeah, you don't.
It
you
costs
don't
the county
that.
when we impound these animals. It costs the county daily to house and feed these things,
right.
And then we have to hold an auction. The auction was, as general statute was implemented, I think last year, year before last, somewhere about that range. And when they wrote it up, it's for livestock, and it's for if a farmer takes in some other farmer's cow or horse or, you know, other large animal, and nobody comes and claims it, they can hold an auction and then try to recoup some of their cost for maintaining that animal.
Mm-hmm.
For the county, we don't recoup any cost. We're losing money.
Mm-hmm. And when it comes to pigs, that's a different care. It ain't just putting them in a run and feeding them food. For a pig to have a, I guess what you'd say, a healthy way of life, it's got to have its slop. It's got to have, it's a whole lot more cost to house these things for as long as we would have to house them. The only thing is, and on the auction, when you get ready to auction them, you got to pay, anytime money's changing hands over an auction block like that, he can tell you, you've got to pay an auctioneer to auction them. Somebody just can't step in and say, I'm an auctioneer, I'll do it for you.
So, are they being auctioned as livestock?
Right now they are. And the way the general state, I actually do the auction on them.
Oh, okay.
I'm able to do that. But there again, though, we're still going into the fact of housing them for the extended periods of time and keeping them in. I think the last one I sold was like, I think I got maybe a dollar out of it.
The most we've ever got for one of the pot-bellied pigs was about $160 or something.
Yeah.
And
that was a fluke.
But typically, if we get the animal, or not if, but when we get the animal and we follow the statute to the letter of the law, we've got $280, $300 in boarding for the pig because we can't board it at the shelter. It's not adequate. So we have to contract that out with the farm. And it's $10 a day, which... That's still a pretty good dang deal, but it still costs, and we don't ever recoup the cost. And I think I see what James is saying because there is some gray area there.
Just a little, and it's all in the gray area of the person that owns the pig.
Yeah.
You know, if they're done with it, they're going to let you take it, and it's going to be your problem.
Yeah.
But if they're still attached to it and in love with it, oh, it's my animal, it's my pet.
Well, and that's fine and good. They can have it back. Right, it's during the time that we don't know if it's the person wants it back or not. I think the law, the spirit of the law was this. You got a farmer that's got 25 head of cattle. He may not recognize right off, hey, I'm missing a head of cattle. So it may take him a month when he's doing his routine vaccines or something before he recognizes it. I think that's why this law is in place, not for somebody that's got one or two potbelly pigs as a pet. They ought to recognize right off that pig is gone and should be looking for it. Now, it's not like a farmer that's got a bunch of cattle or even, you know, horses or whatever. We do follow it like that, and that's fine. We don't have a problem with that because we know, you know, that's more reasonable.
There's no kind of ID on them either that tells you who they belong to.
No, not in most cases, no.
And we, under the statute for livestock, we have to go out, we post a flyer at the courthouse. Of course, the shelter is aware of it, and we put one out in the area in which the animal was found.
Yeah, you have to put it around in the public place.
So for livestock, it kind of goes that way for your farmer. On the belly pigs here, you have, you know, like I said, people are buying these things as pet when they're piglets, and then they say, oh, man, this thing can't sleep in the bed with my kid no more, and they go outside. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we get, I don't know how many we had last year, but when we get these things in, it becomes an issue for the shelter to house them.
Budget
they can't
strums.
House them. Yeah.
Yeah.
They can't house them there, so like you said, we got to contract that out. So it's costing the county money to do this. On a regular pig, you know, or something, that would be different, obviously. We'd look at that as a livestock animal.
Yeah. Most of your bigger animals are supposed to be farm ID'd or pet ID'd either way. So.
Yeah, and a lot of those aren't tagged or anything. So.
There are other counties. I'm not saying that we should do something just because another county's doing it doesn't make it right, but there's other counties that have done this with pot-bellied pigs. And also, it's got to go through you guys. You guys would have to approve even making the recommendation to the Board of Commissioners, but also it would have to be reviewed by the Sheriff's Department attorney and possibly the county attorney if he decides he wants to look at it. So, you know, if they see any red flags and say, you know, this is supplanting state law, well, it's dead in the water right there. So,
I know nothing about pot-bellied pigs, so I have no problem, especially if, you know, you give them good reasons why they should be added. Does that affect the definition under 16.119?
It would be added on to the domestic animal.
Right.
Under the livestock definition, there's swine in there.
It would be domestic animal number 19.
Right. We would have to add it in under 19.
Because it doesn't get a rabies vaccine.
Right. Right.
Okay.
But it's something that we would have to clarify or define as being a domestic animal. It still wouldn't be it wouldn't require a rabies vaccination because the state law wouldn't require that on the pig. But it would take it out of the livestock definition, which is on down at 30, which swine is down there for that. So, yeah.
Yeah, he's got. It's saying right here. What'd you pull this up on?
I just Googled. Is a potbelly pig a pet or livestock?
Purposes of USDA animal disease surveillance, response, and control activities, as well as our import and export requirements, pot-bellied pigs are classified as swine, which are considered livestock. Under the Board of Authority of the Animal Health Protection Act, definitions are associated regulations for our animal disease regulatory programs, which that comes through the state, are primarily found in Title IX of the Code of Federal Regulations. Some species of animal are commonly kept as household pets but are susceptible to disease that are subject to control or eradication by USDA Animal and Plant Health Inspection Services. So even though it's a pot-bellied pig, as much as I'm on board. I don't want to spend the money to house these things either.
But
I think you're federal laws, trouble. At USDA, that's even above the state. USDA, they're saying they're swine, and swine is livestock.
You can still put as an exception in there, right? Can you put in exception?
No, you can go by county.
I'm thinking as the county, we can do it. Now, again, we haven't sat down with the attorneys on this. This is all tonight just to bring it forth to you guys to see, yes, pursue it to see if you can do it, or no, we don't like that idea, don't pursue that.
Can you add, I mean, everything that you said so far is an effort to relieve the city or the county from
expense.
A financial burden.
There should be something in here that says that if a potbelly pig isn't called, what is it?
Swine.
Swine?
What? No. Isn't
claimed.
Claimed, thank you. On the third day, it will be sold.
We can. That's an aspect to look at it, but we would have to get the it under the definition in our county as a domestic versus a livestock.
Yeah. Okay.
If you change it to domestic, doesn't the housing stay the same? You don't have a place for them, so then what happens to them?
We still have to house them out at the farm for the 3 days, but it goes from instead of having it from 15, 20 days,
just the length,
something
of
like that. Yeah,
even with that, having it there for 3 days would be more acceptable at the shelter than having there versus 30 days. So, yeah, we have had pigs.
We've had
there for short periods of time, and if it looked like we weren't going to find the owner, or we would send it. But if we do find the owner and they sign the pig over to us, then we can do what we need to with it.
Do you run any disease tests on them when you bring them in? See, that's the only thing, too, if we turn around and sell one, and it's full of disease, and the guy takes it back to his farm. I mean, that could be blowback too.
So we auction them off all the time.
Yeah.
The auction just that
luckily,
we actually
luckily
got
that
a bunch
ain't
of money,
happened yet.
The auction that we actually made money off of was we made that much money because it was Blue Ridge Humane Society and another, I think it was Brother Wolf. They were there fighting each other to get the pig. So that's the only auction we've had that ever made it up to anything.
That's kind of auction.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they were just sitting there debating who was going to get the first pig we auctioned.
Is there a waiver? If somebody takes the pig and buys it, there's no waiver that says as is?
Nope. Nothing under the statute requires any of that.
Yeah, no, we do a transfer of ownership paperwork just like we do with all animals, and it says, you know, that it, like, kind of what you said, it's as is. Yeah.
Okay.
I got an idea.
If I would come from the shelter, I just do the.
I got an idea. I think we can check on it,
yeah.
And then if you want me to, I can go back to the Department of Ag and find everything I can find on it, and we can talk about it again. But in my idea, keeping it 3 days, and then what about maybe, I know we've paid money to keep it 3 days, but what about sending it to a 4-H club somewhere? These kids are raising pigs all the time to show.
Barely has taken some from us before,
because they're not just Harrison County, Polk or Transylvania, or anybody will come get them if you call them, tell them they got pigs,
and the expense falls back on the county.
It ain't hard
the
getting
shelter,
rid of them once we get that trigger that we can actually do it. They're easy to place in most. They're increasingly getting harder and harder to place, but they're pretty easy to place once you trigger that, satisfy the law and stuff. So
it's just that with the new law in effect and with their being defined under livestock, we've got to keep them.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're getting a lot of these things in. It's just kind of a winning thing to save the county a little bit of money. If you get one in and it's this big and you got to hold it 30 days, well, it's not going to be this big in 30 days. It's going to be this big in 30 days, and it gets harder to get rid of. Mm. And so you just
got to. What we got a breeder selling somebody a pig somewhere that's not a true potbelly, because a true potbelly pig won't get but so big.
Oh, yeah, they should only get about like that, you know.
But. Vince, what about, you know, and I guess, you know, we talk about potbelly pigs, but, I mean, has this become an issue for pygmy goats, pet sheep?
You know, we haven't had any problems with the goats and the sheep.
Okay.
The only issue we've had thus far has been with the pigs. And what's that, the people with the goats and the sheep, they seem to be able to build a fence, keep them in their on their properties. These potbelly pigs, they seem to, when they get too large to be in the bed with their kid, they put it outside, and it just they put up a chicken wire fence or something, and they just can't maintain it.
They lean on it and it's gone.
Yeah, and they just wander all over the place.
Do you guys recoup any of the monies that is expended from the?
Generally not.
But I mean, even if the owner does subsequently claim.
If the owner claims, they have to pay the reclaim fee to the shelter.
And we pass water we've got, so if it's been out at the
farm. Have they ever claimed them back?
Mm-hmm.
Have they?
Yeah. So if it's been out at the, you know, at the place we have it contracted, same with horses too, we will recoup whatever cost we've had to pay. We have to. So, and even like big cruelty cases where we've had to hold horses for a long time, we recoup that cost as part of the court proceedings through restitution. So,
I wonder if whenever they do come back to get them, whether it be the owner or whoever's taking ownership of it, if we can't start making them pet ID it. Because if you'll talk to Josh James, I think there is something you can do to ID it. That way, when you pick it up again, you know exactly who to take it back to or who's at fault.
Yeah. Under the domestic ordinance, if they get picked up running at large, they have to have a microchip.
Microchip.
There you have it.
So it would all follow under that pursuit. If it was running at large, it would have to go through all that stuff.
So just to let everybody know sort of what we're – I guess we're not really asking you guys to vote on anything tonight, right,
no,
Vince?
No, this is just
because
bringing
we're
it
just
forth.
Bringing it forth. Then the attorney's going to write it up, right?
Yeah, we'll have to, these things we'll have to look at and make sure we got them wrote up legally.
So he's not going to write up something if it's not, if he doesn't think it's legal, right?
Yes,
I'm sure.
Yeah, so, I mean.
I'd say try it and see if a lawyer thinks it's good.
Yeah. But I have my doubts, just like you guys do. But
I'm afraid it ain't going to. I would love for it to happen.
Yeah.
I would love for it to happen, but something in my gut tells me it's not going to.
And if it doesn't, we gave
but we
it a shot.
But we can't give up just because we don't think it'll happen. We got to keep moving.
So. If it doesn't work out, then we gave it a shot to do it, and we've done all we can do to try to
save the county. Well, maybe we should look, too, to see if there's a fallback. If the domestic animal label won't work, for the reasons that everyone's saying now, then maybe there's another words that would make it work.
Yeah, what we would do is probably look at it, seeing if we can make it an exception.
We could just say we
to the
thought that pig was a dog.
If you'll sign off on it, I'll
tries to attack you. You got to do what you got to do.
I mean, we'll hold.
We're seeing an increase of this is the problem that we're getting into. So with the increase of it, it's going to cost the county more money to house these things. And when we stop getting people coming in to buy them, then we're left with them. And the county has to make a decision on what to do with the pig, you know, either euthanization or try to send it off somewhere or give it away or something's got to be decided what to do with it. So it's got to, you know. It kind of free up the hands to be able to give it away versus waiting and getting cost involved.
How many do we have now that you found for the 2019?
Have we picked up any this year?
I'm sorry?
Yeah, there has been one.
For this year?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been one or two since 2019. Yeah. I know, I think the city fireman bought the last one, I think.
There's only been one.
It's been warm,
yeah. But last year there was probably
The season's picking up for them now to start running around.
Yeah.
During the wintertime, you don't get it a whole lot, but during the spring, summer, and fall, they just go all over.
They're not. People don't eat them, do they?
Depending on some people might.
It all depends on who buys it.
Yeah, some people might.
I just didn't know if that kind of pig was.
It's not something that you would generally find on your buffet, but somebody might.
Then why do people buy them? For pets?
Pets.
Yeah.
Then they should be here anyway.
So.
Domestic.
Yeah, it's just a matter of getting to see if we can do the exemption and placing it in there. If we can't, we gave it a shot to try to save the county some money. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Yeah, that's the bottom line. We're trying.
Yeah. I can do an auction. It doesn't bother me to do one. It doesn't bother me to put one in the pen out there. It's a cost to the county every time we have to do one.
Well, that's what we need to get away from.
And maybe this, if we can't do it at the local level, maybe it's something we lobby at the state level.
Yep.
You know? Because that's where it would have to change if we can't change it at the local.
I've had Dr. Hargis, you know, she's real advocate of getting this thing changed if we can, because she's like, you know, these things aren't livestock anymore. People are buying them for pets now.
Mm-hmm.
So
We don't know of anybody that uses them for livestock or that uses them for food.
Mm-hmm. But I think what happens is what you said. There's
yeah.
backyard breeders that have taken traditional potbelly pigs, crossed them up with an old
yeah.
sow that they have somewhere, and now they've got these hybrid pigs. They sell them in the secondary market as potbellies. Mm-hmm. They wind up getting larger, and people just...
Yeah. We had a gentleman over here on,
yeah, they
on Glover Street. That pig must have weighed 200-something pounds.
On what street?
Glover, right beside Jackson Park. And it was a potbelly pig, but it had to be, you know, but it would get out and walk down to the park, walk down to the school, and he'd have to walk down and walk it back. He couldn't put this thing in a truck.
That thing was 300 pounds.
Yeah.
It was huge.
So, you know, you're right on that.
And it was a pet.
Some of them can get ornery.
Hmm?
Some of them can get real ornery.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So it's...
Hey, Vince, we're not... The livestock registry, we're not pursuing that, correct?
I'd like to at some point. I'll bring it up. But
my idea is this. Even if we're not pursuing that at this go,
yeah.
Maybe saying if you raise potbelly pigs as livestock in the county, you have to be on a registry.
We can try that. At some point in time, I wasn't prepared to do it tonight. I'm trying to get some more intel before I bring it before the committee. And it's kind of on topic, but off the side of the topic, is we've been having a lot of issues with livestock getting loose, and there's no way to find out who owns the livestock. And our deputies are spending anywhere an average of 3 hours per call, per livestock call, and it takes two deputies to handle the call. And everybody, why two deputies? Well, big animals are big, and they can get ornery. And then if they're in the road, you have to have deputies shut the road down to try to get them off the road. So we've got, and I want to get some type of a dollar amount to give to you as far as what the county spends for a livestock being out. There's no requirement for registry in the county on livestock, and it's not to sit there and write citations to farmers. The big farmers, we know who they are, and if their livestock's out, hey, you know, your cow's out, your horse is out, you need to go get it, or they'll give me the combination or lock, and I'll put it up. What we're talking about is the people who own a horse or two horses, because horses don't like to be alone, or one or two cows that get out, and you search for hours trying to figure out who owns it. And if you can't find the owner, we got to call out a large animal transport crew to come out and pick it up. Then they got to take it to whatever facility they house it at. Now, horses are a little bit easier than cows, but we're getting a lot of cows now. The horses, Miss Capps takes those, and she's right there in, where's she at, Edenville area? And then, but for cows are a little different. Mm-hmm. Our closest cow person, he's got a farm in South Carolina and one down the Green River. But he lives in South Carolina, so he's got to come from South Carolina to pick the cows up. So from a three-hour trying to find somebody has now turned into a six-hour day with two deputies. And it adds a lot of money. I will be the first to tell you, and I don't know how the committee feels about it. A lot of farmers in the community will not like it. And I don't know if the commissioners would go for it if we approved it at this level because of that. But I will tell you, it'll save the sheriff's office tons of money and tons of time trying to locate the people who own these animals to get them back to it. But, again, I wasn't prepared to give you – I want to come in and give you some real good stuff when I present that as stats and numbers that we deal with and kind of a dollar amount we're looking at to kind of
– And kind of to spread the responsibility from just you guys to the owners.
Well, it does. And, you know, it's – Yeah, a lot of farmers now are tagging. A lot of them do have their tags.
Tag or tattoo.
Yeah. And it, like I said, when we're talking, you know, and I'm not really trying to throw out farmers' names or anything, but you got like Bub Hyder with the Longhorn cows out off Clear Creek Road. We know who owns those. Mr. Rhodes, he owns cows out in the pasture right beside his. We know him and we got his number. Taproot Dairy, we know them. We got their phone numbers. I don't know the dairy right off hand, but the one off of 191, we got his information right there beside the old roses. we got the Britons information from off south. So these big farmers, we know who they are. We know how to get a hold of them. This would hit more of your, you know, I've got one or two cows, three cows in a pasture, or two or three horses in the pasture, or something like that, that were kind of, yeah, goats, that type of thing. More of people just bring them home with them versus an at-large thing. But I'll get more numbers and stats up to kind of give you a better baseline on that.
I'm going to put my blatant ignorance on display here. Where do people buy potbelly pigs at? Where do they come from to begin with?
You can buy them at a flea market. You can buy them at a curb market, a tailgate market. Anybody's got them.
Yeah, they're all over.
Huh.
I've heard it.
You go to a horse sale and buy a pig off of somebody's truck. It is.
Okay.
Where's?
It's like the little chickens in the
So they get them from all, and they're cute when they're little. They're about that big. They're pink and they're like fuzzy, and you play with them, and they get bigger.
They're actually pets. I mean, we have had some. The man that had this one over here off of Glover Street, he walked down. He was kind of crippled up, but he rode down to where the pig was. He got out and he called it by name, and it followed him home like a dog.
Yeah.
He didn't leash it. He didn't have it on a leash or anything.
They're smart animals.
They
Very
are.
Smart. Highly they are. Intelligent. But they will get out and go feral. And they do. They get so big. That's the problem. They've been inbred with these other swine, other pigs, and they get huge. And that's when nobody wants them anymore. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the commercials you see on TV when they get a cute fuzzy dog for Christmas, and then 3 months later it's out in the backyard chained to a tree.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I guess what I'm asking for tonight is if you guys would be willing to at least entertain the ideal to where I could do a little bit more research in it with the attorney group to see if it's something legally we can do. And then when it's done, I would present to you what the attorney would actually write up to be voted on to take to the commissioners.
Sure, go for it.
Okay. The second thing is we would like to add a neglect ordinance. This will be something totally new. We've talked in the past about deputies having discretionary availability to write citations within reasonable amounts to people, and this kind of goes to that. Right now in our ordinance, we have the mistreatment ordinance. Great ordinance. I love it. It's a $500 fine in the mistreatment ordinance. Straight out of the gate. There is no anything less. My guys can't write anything less. So if we get to a residence and the residence doesn't have proper shelter, doesn't have proper doghouse, my guys can do one of two things. They can warn them or write them a $500 ticket for that. There's no in between. If the dog knocks the water bowl over, which happens, it's a warning citation or a $500 ticket. If a tether's too short, or you know something of that nature, it's a $500 ticket right out of the gate. There's not any flexibility in it. Here recently, we had a dog come in. The toenails were long. Well, that's a $500 ticket. We've had a few poodles and stuff come in this year that are matted. They really needed a haircut. But it didn't cause any medical issues. That's a $500 ticket per dog. So what we'd like to do is develop a neglect ordinance to where if we're looking at somebody that has issues of not bringing in medical conditions, not to where they have to get medically treated, but prior to that, it could be under the neglect ordinance. So their toenails are too long. You know, look, bud, here's your $50 ticket. You got to go get your nails clipped on your dog, or got to get these mats cut out of your dog's hair, or you know, you didn't get a shelter last week when I warned you. Here's $50. You need to go buy a dog house.
What is the length of the nail that you would?
Well, when they start to curl. The dog's toenails, they'll come out and they'll start to curl. And then when they walk, they'll kind of sit sideways on them, you know. They're not embedding into the pads. If you leave them alone, they will. They'll curl back around. But, you know, just at a point where, look, you need to cut your dog's toenails. They're curling over. Your dog's having problems walking, but it's not causing a medical issue. It's not causing your dog, you know, to go lame or cuts or injuries. It's just needs to be tended to, that type of stuff.
This is kind of vague.
Well, no, but you know it when you see it.
Yeah.
You know it when you see it.
And I'll be honest with you, we left it vague on purpose. The deputies need discretion when they go out. We don't want to put in the ordinance verbatim, your dog knocked its water bowl over, so that's neglect, or toenails. Because certain things come up all the time. And what may be in there that we write, tomorrow we'll find something and be like, darn, we should put that in there.
So you don't see a distinction between no water and a bowl that knocked over?
Yes, he does. That's why he's saying he wants the deputies
right
to have
now,
discretion.
Right now, that would go under the mistreatment ordinance, and that's a $500 ticket.
We have also run into water bowls that you could tell there had been no water in in a long time.
Yeah.
Where they would be dirty or they'd be dried leaves in the bottom of the water bowl. Versus a water bowl that, well, when they tell us, well, we watered the dog this morning, but he knocks the water bowl over.
All the time.
And generally, when we have something like this, we will go out and warn somebody first. We don't go out and sling citations and write tickets, usually, unless it is a situation where it is a medical necessity. If it's like that, if it's a situation where it is the dog's in bad shape, then we still have the $500 ticket or arrestable offense on mistreatment. This is for violations that are much less, that they don't warrant a $500 ticket.
These are for violations that wouldn't require the dog to seek medical treatment. It could be a neglect case where that it's causing the animal, say they're dehydrated and having, you know, medical problems from that. Well, that's going to bump it into a mistreatment charge versus neglect. So.
We're not asking to get rid of the mistreatment ordinance. We're asking to add this ordinance into it. So, for example, I'll give you this one. This happens a lot, especially during the summertime. They'll put out a bowl of water in the morning when they leave for work. The dog will knock the water over. Happens all the time. So you get the call out there for the dog not having any water. Well, you could tell the dog knocked the water bowl over. So what you do, you put more water out for the dog and you let it be and leave a note for him to call you. Well, the next day, the dog's knocked the water bowl over again. Well, I got two options. I can warn him again or I can write him a $500 ticket. This will give me, So this right here will give me an option to say, look, man, here's a $50 ticket. You know, you need to dig a hole, stick your water bowl in there so your dog won't knock the water bowl over. I told you that yesterday. Those type of things are things that we come into a lot of times. When we write a citation, what we have to keep in mind is if they don't pay their citation within 30 days, we have the obligation to criminally charge them and take them to court. So when I take somebody if you charged me $500, I wouldn't have it to pay you, especially for something that could be minute that they could use the money to actually fix the problem. So they go to court with a $500 citation. So we have to prove the case for the underlying charge and that they didn't pay the citation. Them not paying the citation is easy. They didn't pay it. Proving that the underlying charge is there and worthy of the $500 to begin with, you have to convince the judge of that. And then if they found guilty in district court and they want a jury trial, well, then you go before 12 people in a box. So this stuff can escalate real quickly. So what we're trying to do is find a way that we can write them a lesser amount citation for lesser issues and then, you know, solve the problem.
Go up. Like if you reduce these, which makes sense, and they're payable within 30 days, at the end of 30 days, could it double if they're not paid?
Not right now. That's not in the ordinance.
No, I'm just
asking. We could add that in the ordinance, but as of right now, no.
If we're going to rework it. At the end of 30 days, we go to the magistrate's office, and we take a criminal summons or a warrant on that person. But the warrant or the criminal summons is actually for failure to pay fine. It's not for the offense. But then when it goes to court, then the judge will actually address that.
Okay. Yeah.
They tend to address the issue plus the failure to pay the fine.
Mm-hmm. Paul or Vince, could you tell me why we're dealing with this three times? I guess I support what you're saying, but I would be inclined to first, second.
Right. Oh, yeah.
We talked about that just before we came over. We talked about that, too. That just gives us leeway. That gives us leeway to deal with somebody.
Okay.
Generally, in a situation like this, if we charged them one time the $50 and we went back the second time, it wouldn't be a $100 fine. It would be the $500 mistreatment.
Okay. Yeah. I'm good with that.
This gives us first, second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And right now, we're kind of bringing it before you to kind of work these things out also.
Because earlier you were talking about the time that an officer has to spend with something or another, whether it be livestock, you know, and you're talking about six-hour shifts, you know, taking care of. And I think this, too, is an example where the officer, it's incumbent upon them to return and return and return.
Yeah, right.
And I'd be more inclined, and again, I could accept the idea that the officer would make that call, but I'd be more inclined, first time, $50, okay, you know, this can't happen. But second time, you know.
And it's written in there. It's $50 per violation.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
So violation. If you get out there and there's like three issues, well, that could be $150 at one shot.
While we're looking at this, we have had recently. We've had you may have seen it in the newspaper or on Facebook. We recently had a Doberman Pinscher that was tied out. Brad actually went out. We went out with Brad at Thanksgiving and vaccinated the dog for some folks. The dog was in good shape, excellent shape, very healthy, very lively. January, Brad, that we got the dog in?
January the 15th or something.
We went back out and had to take the dog. The dog was severely malnourished.
They must have quit feeding that dog the day after we were there.
It was serious, that fast. Now, that situation, we wrote that man a $500 ticket, and we arrested him for it, too.
Yeah.
Which the $500 citation is civil. The arrest is criminal. So we're dealing with two different things there. And what we're talking about here is a lesser offenses. If we go out, we had the Labrador Retriever out there that had the cable that had grown into his neck. Oh, yeah.
I know that dog. I know.
Well, a great dog. Great dog.
Yeah.
They went to jail. We get those type of things. We do occasionally. And that's definitely worthy of the $500 plus. And generally, we've talked about it just recently, too. Usually, if we write somebody a $500 ticket, they're usually going to go to jail, too. It's not going to be just a $500 ticket. But we go out and we see these other offenses that are a lot less. You go out and see a healthy dog that somebody has chained him out in the yard, but they don't have shelter for him, and maybe they don't have water for him right then, and they're like, well, we just left this morning, but we were going to come back after lunch. No, that's not going to work either, but you can tell that they care for the dog, and they do take care of the dog.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've got something now that we can lesser than the $500 tickets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of our $500 citations winds up in criminal court.
Mm-hmm.
And people, if I got written a $500 citation myself, I would probably wind up in criminal court within 30 days to pay for it. It's a lot of money, and I would want to try to fight that. So that's what we're looking at. We had two, I think they were poodles. I can't remember what kind of them. What were they?
Lab and a poodle.
And it was matted. And it needed a haircut, something fierce. And, I had two options for that man that day. A $500 citation or a warning citation. Well, it was bad. The dog needed a haircut. But there was no maggots underneath it. It hadn't got to where it was making sores and stuff like that yet. So there was no medical attention needed. But it needed a haircut bad.
It was on the way to being
bad. Yeah, it could have gotten worse. And if it would have been summertime, there would have been. So I had to give him a warning citation for that instead of charging him money for that, because my option was a warning ticket or $500. We had these two little dogs come in. I can't remember. Shih Tzus. See, I love it when she's here. Shih Tzus that came in, and they were in the same condition. They had, I think their nails may have been a little long. Their hair needed to be cut. It was bad, but no sores or anything underneath the hair. So it was, you know, it was worthy of a $50, $100 ticket, but it wasn't quite a $500 ticket. So we're having to give, we're having to make an option of just saying, look, guys, don't do that again, or a $500 ticket. And I'm going to be honest with you, nine times out of ten, it's going to be leaned toward don't do that again. Because when you write a $500 citation, that's a lot of money. You're going to go to court. So this gives us a little leeway, and I don't want to put specifics in there. We put examples, and that's what I did there, the no water, no shelter. They're just examples of what we're looking at, but the hair, the nails, you know, certain living conditions could be unsanitary for the dog, but not require a $500 ticket. But, you know, man, here's your $50, and you need to clean your dog lot out. Mm-hmm. You know, those kinds of things. Now, if it reaches a point where medical is needed on the dog, that's a mistreatment. That's a $500 ticket.
Right. I guess so, my only thought would be, just as long as the officers are not held to, I have to do this for the second offense, I have to do this for the third offense.
No, I want the, and that's the reason why we left it kind of vague. I want the guys to be able to go out and do their job without having to go, oh, A, B, C, D. No. Mm-hmm. You know, and for the first time going out there, it could be, it's $50 per violation. So if there's no shelter, no water, that could be $100. Or the nails are too long, or it needs to be groomed, that could be $100. That's two different violations. Or they can give them $50 for all the violations if they feel it's going to fix the problem. You know, I did a three-step, yeah.
If it's not that bad a shape, but you can see that it's going that way, we can always go back to a warning.
Yeah.
We generally, when we go out and warn someone, we generally write a warning ticket. And in that way, it's documented that we've been there. When we write that warning ticket, it's actually turned into our records. So there's a traceable document that's happened.
And are the warnings effective?
Sometimes.
Most of the time. And there again, it depends on the situation. We have, if we go out and it's something bad, there is no warning. Yeah. We deal with it. We deal with the situation there. If it's something lesser, then it's, you know, if it's something that's not really bad but it needs to be tended to, that's when we use a warning. But there is instances here where we feel that a $50 citation would encourage them greatly to take care of the problem.
Make sure it doesn't reoccur is what we're after. And, you know, we have it set up in the three phases. You know, at the end of these things, like the haircuts, I gave him a time frame to have that done in. If it's not done in that time frame, well, we just bumped up to $100, mm-hmm. You know, and give them another time frame. It's still not done. Well, then we could bump it up to the $150. And at the third time not doing what I told you to do, I'm going to get a pickup or I'm going to seize your animal and we're going to take care of it. I'm going to take it court on it. We're going to seize your animal. You know, it's not. This does not eliminate criminal charges. It just gives us a little bit of oomph, hopefully, to get people to do things.
We're trying to solve the problem. We're trying to solve the problem with folks here without going to the extreme that we would under a bad medical condition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, especially if it's something where somebody's, they've just been neglectful. They've got busy in their life. They've got their lives, too. And they've said, oh, I'm sorry, you know, that type of thing. But something more serious than just a warning. Mm-hmm.
That's actually going to give you more. You just spoke of documentation a while ago, which is key. And everything. You got to document it. You just tell somebody something, and then you go back, it don't hold up.
Yeah.
So that right there is doing nothing but giving you more documentation.
Exactly.
And it's going to be more under our belt or the county's belt when they do decide to go all the way, then they're going to have all that documentation. A judge shouldn't throw that out. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it'll help.
We have run into that before, too. We have dealt with people before that we had to go back. We've dealt with one recently that we had to go back and say, look, we've got to do something. We were in touch with Beverly Hargis. It was over, it wasn't over animals, it wasn't over dogs and cat domestic, it was over livestock, but we've had that situation before where we had to keep prodding to solve the problem.
And this right here would, I mean, it's not, I didn't put in there for domestic animals only, so this would cover animals in the county. So you could use it for a little motivation on some other issues if it came up for livestock.
Sometimes we'll have donkeys where they won't take care of their donkeys and their hooves will grow, and that will cripple a donkey. It will absolutely ruin a donkey.
So, but what we're looking at is we've got to be able to distinguish a $500 site, my opinion, and it's only my opinion, is if you write somebody a $500 ticket, there should be a criminal charge behind it. That's a lot of money. I don't know of anything under a misdemeanor. Well, I'm sure there is, but a $500 fine is a lot of money for a fine.
Are you wanting us to vote on something?
Nothing up here tonight is to be voted on.
Because we've got other stuff to discuss, and I'm just kind of...
Yeah. No, this right here, everything tonight that is presented in here is to give to you guys. You guys can read over it, discuss it, debate it. We can come back and talk about it next time. If y'all want to jot things down that you guys want to see in it, you know, like, hey, Vince, what about, you know, blah, blah, blah on it? We'll write it down and bring it back next time we meet.
So it'll be like from 3 months? I mean, the next
meeting? Yeah, the next meeting we can come back and revisit everything. I want you guys to look at it and put your spin on it. You know, if you guys see something that I don't or have a question about something that I didn't put in there, you know, obviously I want to know about it. So when it's actually written and done, and, you know, next time we can meet up, y'all can add some stuff to it or whatever, and then once we're done compiling what we think should be in the ordinance, then I could take that to the attorney and have him do all the legalities on it and then bring back that at the end of it. So this might take 6 months to get done. This might take 4 months. I don't know. However long it takes, but this is just up for discussion. So, if everybody's good on that, we'll move to the next one. Okay.
Do you want to discuss the rest of this, or you want us to read it?
Oh, I can breeze through it. It's up to y'all. I can breeze through the rest of it. I think it's a lot easier than opening up a new ordinance.
So, I guess I would also want to ask the committee. Do we need the time to look at this? I mean,
before we hear it.
Mm-hmm. I guess that because I guess my thought would be, from what you've explained, mm-hmm. I would be totally in support of your recommendations. But I don't know. Again, I'm asking the committee: do they want the additional time, the 3 months?
Well, I would do the same thing that you've just suggested, except I would like it gelled more.
Yeah.
What you're going to present, and
this tonight, everything that's in here tonight is suggestions that we have that we'd like to see, and obviously we would like the committee's input on it. And
well, but if the attorney redoes the whole thing, then we're the attorney
will write it up in legal terms,
right? So that's going to give us a different.
It would have the same outcome. It would just be in legal terms. So if you guys wanted to add something to that, we can. And when the attorney writes it up, it'll be written out in legal terms so it complies with, well, the way the ordinance reads. You know, a lawyer writes it up. So,
well, I think the odds are pretty good that we'll support you.
But I want you guys to read over it, too. If you guys come back in the next meeting and you guys say, hey, Vince, I thought about this. Can we add that in there? I could jot it down. You know, and then once we all compile.
I read this.
I know. That's why I'm just presenting everything tonight. So I don't expect anything to get voted on tonight.
This has to take so long because you're looking at something that you've experienced and I think would probably want to put it into effect pretty quickly.
Sure, but I'm not opposed to waiting to make sure we got it done appropriately.
We can also, and we've done this in the past during ordinance revisions, we've called special meetings to expedite stuff, and we can do that.
Yeah.
I just have to, legally I have to give a 30-day public meeting notice. So if we wanted to expedite it,
I think there needs to be some very clear definitions of neglect,
that's
not limited to water and shelter, because
some people think
leaving a dog outside in the winter is neglect. I would never leave my dog outside in the winter, but it doesn't mean that they don't love their dog because they left it outside in the winter.
Right.
I think the same thing falls with the matting of the hair. Right. But, you know, if it's not causing a medical issue, then, you know, somebody just, you know, I don't think that's a judgment call.
It's a judgment call.
I think, so when you're talking very vague terms, well, I think you're going to get into some issues with people calling you out and saying, well, that's your opinion, and I think my dog is fine all matted up. I don't care. You know, I think it's okay. Now, the nails and the water and the food and things like that, you know, those are very specific issues. But when you talk about being very vague and leaving a lot of room for, which I understand, but then you're leaving yourself the same, where someone says that's a judgment call.
Except the matting, I will disagree with you to a certain extent. Having a dog that mats very easily, Labradoodle, Doodle thing, it, long before it gets to have medical issues, it's painful. And to me, that's a medical issue. If you have a dog that's really matted and has not been taken care of and needs to be shaved off because it's so matted, to me, that is bordering on
the cases we've had, that's what's had to happen is they've had to be shaved.
Right. What?
The cases we've had on the matting, they've had to be shaved. I mean,
it's not necessarily that there's stuff underneath that has caused anything, but it's painful for the dog. They can't move if everything is all tied up together. So
I'm not objected to writing in more specific. That's for the discussion here tonight. And if you know, if you guys want to write something up and present it to me, I don't mind typing it in.
Might be better to take pieces away than.
I don't think we're denying that there needs to be an ordinance that identifies neglect. I don't think that's the challenge. I think neglect needs to be defined, you know.
We had a situation recently. You were talking about dogs outside. We had a canine, a husky that is bred for cold weather. We had so many complaints on this dog, and people couldn't see. The dog was well taken care, very well taken care of. Had a long runner, and the runner ran back to a very large doghouse, very large, but people couldn't see that. And when the dog went inside the doghouse, there was actually another smaller doghouse inside that house, very well taken care of. We had so many complaints on this dog. We went several times that we quit going to check on the dog. The last time we went, the man, I believe it was
he put a shirt on the dog.
He put one of the sweaters on a husky dog.
The dog had to be burned.
Well, I think
it was 50 degrees, Jack.
I think what you just defined is what you and I are saying is that it is by definition on how you feel personally what is neglect and what is not neglect.
Exactly, but when you've got a situation with a husky with hair this long...
Hey, they're designed for that.
I would, and you put a sweater on in 50-degree weather, it's almost an abuse case in that situation. So,
I'm not objective to putting more in or defining a definition of what the county may say is a neglect case. At all, and feel free. I'd love for somebody to write one up because I'm not good at that part.
Ron will probably do it for you.
he's going to do the finished copy. But is also with the deputy's training and ability of being in this unit, they have knowledge of what neglect is. And it's no difference than the county noise ordinance, which is open to interpretation. It has to be an annoying noise to a person. What annoys me won't annoy you. But it's still defined as that in the ordinance.
How many of your neglect calls are because the officer identified it or the citizen identified it?
All our calls are complaint driven.
This isn't going to reduce the times you go. If she and I perceive the dog as being neglected, you're going to get the phone call regardless of how, and you're going to have to go.
Not necessarily.
That's not exactly what we're looking for here. What we're looking for is a reduction. If it's a lesser offense, we're not looking for the I agree with you. We need to, this needs to be more specific, and we can look at it and add more to this to make it more specific. But what we're looking at, it's just like I said, if you've got a healthy animal and you can tell that it's taken care of, but somebody's put it out in the yard with no shelter, and they think that's okay, law says it's not. Is that worthy of a $500 ticket when I have the same $500 ticket that I've given to the Labrador Retriever that had the cable embedded in its neck?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. And that's what we're looking at. We're not looking at, opinionated. And you're right. I believe you're right. We need to be more specific with this. It needs to be a little bit more specific. And we can look at that, too. And you can, too. You know, if you come up with an idea, jot something down.
I guess my question would be in terms of, and I see where you're saying, it's a double-edged sword here.
Yeah.
As an officer, you know, and not necessarily even just dealing with animals, how much, you know, you deal with a subjective evaluation of a given circumstance and how you can dial that in a particular ordinance, whether it's dealing with animals, traffic violations, whatever, and how much leeway these guys get in terms of enforcing that and issuing a fine in a given range. And then I think beyond that, it would be the within the owner's right to take that up in court, mm-hmm. if they felt like they had the right to appeal it in some way. And so I guess I find it hard to see how, unless you either make it very broad, you know, no water, no shelter, which within what these guys see on a daily basis, there are probably 100, as they've outlined here, 100 different exceptions mm-hmm. to those broad categories. And whether that really even allows them any latitude or not to impose varying fines. So I think it would be harder to be much more specific and take away their subjective ability to assess a given circumstance. And I think that's what they're getting at here is, you know, allow us to essentially determine, you know, is this a $50 or warning issue, or is this a $500 fine right out of the gate and a criminal charge? And how you have to, and I can't imagine the amount of paper that in order to foresee every circumstance that they would impose those fines. I mean, is that kind of what I'm hearing from you? And so
I'll give you a case real quick. Is we had a guy, he got a $500 ticket. He had left his house, tethered his dog to his stairs, and he was probably gone 30 minutes or something.
Longer than that, about three and a half hours.
About 3.5 hours. He left the dog there for a few hours. The dog got tangled up around the porch, didn't have a shelter.
Sister called.
He got a $500 ticket, and we wound up having to charge him criminally because he's like, that is no way that's worth $500. And we went to court, and I did a plea deal with him, and got things taken care of. He didn't pay $500. I'll tell you guys that right now. A judge took care of that. But that's the kind of stuff we have to lean to. Either it's a, and right now it's totally on our discretion of whether it's a $500 ticket or a no ticket. So, I mean, I understand, and I'm not opposed to trying to make a more defined definition of it. But I think we need to keep the openness of the availability of the deputy to determine what they perceive.
It's my opinion that you probably should ask the attorney to define, let's go this from another direction, define the owner's responsibilities in taking care of an animal. Okay, does that kind of make sense? Like, you if you define it and say, okay, if you're an animal owner, you should have food, water, shelter.
That's already defined.
Right, but that's what I'm saying, though. Can you tie this in as part of that? Because that's what some of the other...
It would flow into the ordinance, and the definitions for those are already in there.
Yeah, they're there. And there's some other, like mistreatment as in sanitary or unsanitary living conditions.
Right.
Which I think that was a really good idea, that should be included here, too.
But we deal with stuff
specific with it,
and I'll give you two verses. And I know we keep going around with it, but we had a house with, I think there was like 25, 30 cats in it or something. You couldn't even walk in the door because the ammonia was so strong.
Yeah.
So that was a $500 ticket. We actually wound up arresting people because the cats had their eyes were like conjunctivitis and air problems, lung problems and stuff. So she got arrested. He got a $500 ticket. Well, we had a guy who had a dog lot. He went on vacation, and the boy watching his dog didn't clean the poop out of the dog lot. So the dog was walking around in feces. He got a $500 ticket.
It was pretty bad.
It was bad. It had been there for a week, but there was no option. It was like, you got to find them. So it was a $500 ticket.
That's what we're leaning towards. We're looking at a more fair, more equal balance. And I believe you're correct, absolutely. With more definitions, it would make it even more fair and more balanced. It's the same situation when a deputy pulls somebody over for speeding. Where does it go? Where does it go from being speeding to being careless and reckless? Mm-hmm. If you're going 5 miles an hour, you know, it depends on the situation. Each one of those depends on the situation. If you're running 5 miles an hour over the speed limit down a straight highway, that can be, I stop you and I give you a warning, slow down. If you're running 15 miles an hour down a straight highway and we pull you over and we write you a ticket, but if you're running 15 or 20 miles an hour over the speed limit in a careless and reckless manner, you understand where I'm going with this? It's a whole lot different. It's more than just speeding. And sometimes we have a minor situation of neglect, like Vince was saying, a dog in a pen with feces that needs to be cleaned out, and a situation where you've got a dog that's in really bad shape.
Is it possible for you to work before we meet again, whether a special meeting or the meeting in July? Is it possible for you to work with the attorney and get specific language? That gives you latitude, and yet, you know, legally, because I think we are more able to work with specifics and say, yes, we're comfortable with this, no, we're not. And yet, you know, we need to look at something that you're already comfortable with, the attorney is comfortable with. So it's almost like we have to see it after it's almost ready to go to press, so to speak.
Not quite as vague.
I guess so, yeah. So if that's possible, again, either before July or if Brad calls a special meeting for us to look at the amended ordinance, if that's possible.
I think that's a good idea.
That would be better, too, because I will not be here at the July meeting, so if we can, we'll still have the July meeting, but we could do it before, do a special called meeting. And
just a quick question.
Yes.
How many of these $500 tickets have you wrote that a judge has threw away?
They haven't thrown them away.
We've come up thrown them out where they didn't have to pay them.
We do it's called a deferred prosecution a lot of times.
Most of them have been paid.
Okay.
We haven't, since we've been doing this for the past almost 5 years, we have not lost a case.
The reason I ask, if he's throwing them away $500 at a time because he feels like that's too much, well, then this right here would still give you grounds to get some money out of somebody. He may not throw out a lesser charge.
And that's kind of my look at it, is you get something rather than nothing. When you write somebody a $500 ticket, we're going to go to court. It's going to show up because people don't have $500 to give you in 30 days.
Almost always.
So when you go to court, generally what we wind up doing is we do what's called a deferred prosecution, which means they plead guilty to the underlying charge, and they go out for anywhere, depending on what it was for, anywhere from 6 months to 2 years. then they come back to court. If they've gone forth and not done it again, it goes away for them, and they don't pay anything. But it puts it in the bracket to where they can't violate it again during that time frame, or they get that plus a double.
Kind of like a prayer.
Yeah, like a prayer for judgment. So it comes in, and so at the end of the 6 months or a year or whatever time frame they're looking at, it'll get disposed of.
Okay.
So it puts stipulations on them to fix it, but you had to go to a court proceeding to kind of get that ball rolling. Most people don't want to go before a judge on an animal crime, especially in our county. So, but we haven't, and I don't want to brag on that, knock on wood, we haven't lost a case yet.
Well, yeah, let's take it to him and bring it back. We'll see what we can do. My opinion. I ain't opposed to it at all.
The next one we want to look at, and I'll try to run through these. I know this is going a lot longer than anybody thought, and I was just kidding at the beginning, is the fines on dogs running at large. Well, we run into a couple of issues with this. A fine right now for a canine running at large is $50. It stays at $50. First offense, second offense, doesn't matter. It's $50. A dog has to run at large a minimum of 3 times to be considered a nuisance, to where you can go to the nuisance charge. The problem with that is you have to deem the dog in a nuisance before you go to nuisance charges. And then obviously they have the right to appeal it before the board, just like a potentially dangerous dog. So what we'd like to do is actually increase the fines on canines running at large. Right now they're 50. We'd like it to be 50 for the first time, or a warning. I believe in officer discretion on that, so it could be a warning or it could be $50. Second time, go to 100. Third time, be 150. Fourth time, would be 200. The big thing on this is the section on the right where it says aggressive. We have incidences in the county where canines are run at large. They're aggressive, but they don't meet the definition of being deemed dangerous or potentially dangerous. We had a call the other day where a dog went after another dog. Didn't cause any injury to the dog, but was the dog aggressive to the other dog? Absolutely, 100%. And it was off the owner's property. Well, you can't deem it because it didn't do severe injury and no injury to the other animal. So this gives us a little latitude to boost those fines up to try to get people to maintain their animals a little better.
I have no problem with that.
No. Just curious, why is the increase, again, $50, $100, $50, $100?
The minimum fine by ordinance is $50. That's the minimum. And I just figured if we doubled it, you know, eventually. I will say this, when you start writing tickets, when I've hit the $100 mark, that usually wakes somebody up. Even that guy that says, I've got money, I don't care, you give him the $100 one, and he's like, ooh, wait a minute. It really wakes him up at the $100 mark. But on the aggressive side, it's just, you know, these dogs who are aggressive, they don't meet the being deemed. Well, we don't deem everything we come across. But some of those incidences, you know, a little increase in the fine will, you know, hopefully help them keep their canine up.
And that would also curtail a possible situation with a dangerous dog. We had a situation this week, a Great Pyrenees. Great Pyrenees got out, goes across off of its property onto the neighbor's property after his little Jack Russell.
Mm-hmm.
The gentleman picked the Jack Russell up. The Great Pyrenees wasn't really he was being aggressive, but he wasn't being dangerous. We don't know if he was trying to play with the Jack Russell or if he was trying to hurt the Jack Russell, but then he jumped up on the man, almost knocked the man down. He was elderly. Not in an aggressive manner toward the man, but somebody almost got hurt anyway. The dog was being aggressive, whether it was playfully aggressive or dangerously aggressive, we don't know. But this would give us some teeth to tell these folks, according to the man, now he didn't call us before, but according to the gentleman, this is the third time that something like this has happened. Mm-hmm. But he didn't call us the first 2 times, and we told him he should have, of course. But this would give us some teeth if we go out and say, hey, here we are. And that person did get a $50 ticket.
Yeah.
And the dog got taken to the shelter, in which they had to pay the shelter fees, too. So that makes it a little more, you know, mm-hmm. And we're looking to solve problems with these issues.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times if you write somebody a $100 ticket, that'll solve a problem.
Yeah. But that's kind of like we're looking on that. The reason why that has four steps instead of the three, after the third step, the dog could be deemed a nuisance. So we do the deeming of a nuisance on the dog, and it's going. They want to appeal it, and we're waiting for that process to take place. If it happens again during that appeal time, what it automatically goes to, it's the fourth offense, so it's a $200 ticket. So it just kind of keeps things in balance. My last thing, and then Brad's is in there pretty good too, is on the dangerous dog, potentially dangerous dog part. It's on the last page down at the bottom. The sign requirements is 120 square inches. Well, there's no, that could be 1 inch wide and very long. What we'd like to see it changed to is a 1.5 by 11. That's the size of, that's a sheet of paper. That's the size of this piece of paper right here. What we would like to look into is actually the county developing our own dangerous dog sign. I went out with Brad Reese this past, last couple. By the way, Brad Reese is back with us, in case y'all didn't know that. And he's doing the dangerous dog inspections again. We went to three houses who had improper signs. That's their only violation. They had signs. They were just improper signs. You know, some had them on a sheet of paper this size. Some had some that just said, beware of dog with a mean picture of a dog in it. So they tried. They just didn't, they weren't within compliance. So they got some warning citations and were told to fix their signage and stuff. But we would like to develop our own sign. If you guys would be in agreement with that, we'll try to get something together and bring back. It would be like a neon color that a deputy sheriff or you guys could walk up and say, there's a dangerous dog living there. That kind of thing.
I would understand. I mean, you know, like it, poison signs. I mean, things.
It would still, yeah, it would be a bright, I'm thinking about like a bright neon green or lime green, some kind of bright color that stands out that you could see on the side of the house. It'll have the picture of the mean dog still. And then it would say like Henderson County deemed dangerous dog or something to that effect.
Well, that hanging up, if somebody pulls up on a call there, that automatically he could look and see that we've had a problem here before, and he's already gearing himself toward dealing with it. This ain't the first time. I don't have to be lenient. We've been here before. Mm-hmm. He knows what he's dealing with. I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Yeah. Well, we had a deputy sheriff almost get bit by a dangerous dog. He went to the house on a call, and they had beware of dog signs. And the boyfriend of the owner of the dog actually, he purposely let the dog loose. And the deputies get there, and there's a pit bull running around. And he, you know, obviously it wasn't pretty. They got the dog, but the lady was able to get the dog put back up before anybody got bit. But, you know, if he had seen that, he would have known that's not Fluffy. Here's the big thing on dangerous dogs. We would like to see if we can implement a $100 registration fee for dangerous dogs in the county. Reason for that is Brad or whomever's in charge of dangerous dogs makes two inspections on each dangerous dog a year. That's man hours from the county. I just feel it would be a good benefit to the county to reimburse some money for people owning dangerous dogs in the county for the time spent of the deputy going out there.
I agree.
The only thing that occurs to me is you well know that a lot of the people that we see don't have a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Some of them have that effect. Now, I will say this. I have done research on this one. A lot of counties, well, I won't say a lot because I can't give you a number. Some of the counties I've reviewed, they actually charge $500 a year.
Wow.
Yes, ma'am.
Because you know what's going to happen. It's like people who say they can't meet the restrictions for a dangerous dog, so they give the dog up.
Yeah.
And I guess as long as we're looking at that possibility and acknowledge that possibility.
My argument on that would be if they can't afford $100 a year to maintain their dog, then they probably can't comply with a dangerous dog anyway.
Absolutely not.
I mean, that's just my outlook on it. In this right here, eventually what we'd like to do once we make our signs, you know, when the dog gets deemed dangerous initially, we would actually give them, here's your signs, go put them up. You know, and that would kind of be included with that.
The signs
that are being used now are copyrighted.
Yeah.
They have to order them. So we could actually make some up ourselves and say here, not have it copyrighted, where we could have a Henderson County, this is your sign. Mm-hmm.
And when Brad goes out, he has to
have four.
Yeah, he has to make sure that the dog, he actually rescans each dog to make sure the chip is the same chip that's on the records. He has to do the rabies shots verification. And you'll be amazed how many people never keep their certificate. So you have to get the information to call the vet to get the clarification. You know, he checks. If it's got a lot that they put it in outside, which we've only got two in the county right now that are in an outside lot, you know, he has to inspect the lot to make sure it's still maintained up to date, nothing's broke on it. So it takes him some time to do these things when he goes out.
Yeah, I understand. I see a lot more dogs being given up.
Yeah, I would. Yeah. Like I said, I would argue the fact that if $100 is going to break them, they're probably not totally in compliance a lot of times. I won't say everybody. But
honestly, Patty, if somebody has a dog that's deemed dangerous, usually we're going to be getting that dog some way, shape, or form in the next year anyway.
The average dog in Henderson County is 6 months, and we have. Yeah. Wow. I mean, and I'll be mm-hmm. honest with the board on that. They will have a violation severe enough to seize that. Usually the dog runs off the property. Mm-hmm. For the signage, we give them a warning the first time. We'll ride them. The second time for your signs is a $500 ticket. Mm-hmm. We've had some that refuse to get their dog spayed or neutered afterwards. We've had some that refuse to get them chipped afterwards. And on those type, we seize your, if those violations are in effect, we'll seize the dog, and then we'll take you to, we seize your animal, we write you a $500 ticket, and we take you to jail.
Mm-hmm. And then he goes before a judge.
Then he goes before the district court judge.
Has to decide what to do.
So
we've had some very serious cases, mm-hmm. and we can look, and this is, Vince put this in here, so we can talk to y'all about it and see what you think and how you feel about it.
And this would be an annual.
It's an annual. It would be once a year fee. You know, if we go out there and their signs are destroyed for whatever reason, which they shouldn't be, they should call us if they are. You know, then we can give them a new sign. And
I agree with the fee. I really, mm-hmm. really don't. But I'm just acquiescing that you're probably going to see more dogs. People will make the decision. As you well know, some of the people that we've seen, you know, are very little means.
And I'll agree with you on that. Mm-hmm. And that's why after reviewing some of these counties who have real high fees, I was like, well, man, there's no way I'll get $500 out of some of these people. Yeah. But $100 just to pay for a little bit of time, yeah. I don't think that's unreasonable.
Understand.
Yeah, the board thinks of a different price. I'm more than happy to listen to that as well. But
whenever they put this together, you'll get it to Brad, and we can have a copy of it and look and see what they've done?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. What we could do is, tonight, I just wanted to bring everything up, see what your opinion was on it, see which way I need to go with certain things, research more on the definition, checking out on the pig deal to see if we can even get that exempted into the...
I'll check on that.
You know, that kind of stuff. Yeah. And that's what the night was about, to see what direction the board would even be willing to go to before I sat down with an attorney and start occupying his money and time, or county's money, his time, to piece things together. So, and then Brad had a...
On page two?
Yeah, Brad had his on page two for the bike quarantine.
Yeah, if you just go down where it says insert... Yeah, we've had a couple of cases over the past year where we've had dogs that are required to be at the shelter on bike quarantine that have medical needs beyond the scope of what we can provide. In those cases, the dog, cat needs to go to a vet because, number one, it may have medication intervals outside of our regular operating hours, or, you know, it may need insulin that... you know, you got a dog or a cat there that's on bite quarantine. It's going to bite some, or it has bitten somebody, so I'm not going to expect my staff to do that. So it makes it their responsibility to do the quarantine at a vet's office. We're a veterinarian. So, and the only reason it's in there, it seems common sense, but we had a lady pitch a fit because she had to quarantine her dog at the vet's office, and we made her pay for it. I don't know why we're supposed to pay for it, but anyway, it just gives us some backing. That's all it is.
It's easy
enough.
Yeah. Good. All right. Does anybody have any questions or anything else to add?
I'd like to move to adjourn.
Yeah. Do I have a second?
A second.
All right. We're out of public hearing. Thank you very much, everybody, for coming in. Thank you all for presenting all this.
Yes. I promise you guys, when I came in here and made a joke about 7 o'clock, I was really kidding.